Ready and record. This week, Wednesday night and Thursday, we mark Lag BaOmer. Lag LaOmer, as the Shulchan Aruch writes. But the question is, what exactly are we marking? What is this day about? And that's a little bit hard to know, because we're dealing with something which is in the first place a minhag. In as much as we say that the avelus of the Sfiras Omer is tied to the demise of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, but there's one little dark secret that's associated with that. From the death of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim until we began having avelus during Yimei Asfira is probably 900 years. Maybe 1,000 years.
So
not less than less than 900.
It's questionable how connected they are.
You know, so it's sort of, in retrospect, you know, the Sfiras HaOmer, if you even look in the Torah, Yosef, so they called Ibn Shu'ab. Ibn Shu'ab is not normally often quoted in Sifrei Halacha. I mean, he was more in Yonam of Drush and Chumash, these type of things. But in the Sefer Halacha is not exactly you find Ibn Shu'ab often quoted. That's quoted as the source of the Avelus during Sfira. So I guess he reports that there's such a minhag. No, not at all. And that's the problem. So now we're dealing that we have Lag BaOmer. And Lag BaOmer is an adjustment within something which is a minhag. Now the minhag itself, we have a hard time putting our arms around. You see from all the different minhagim that we have, we don't have such a clearly defined messer as to what exactly, you know, how to go about this. Right? We have the first minhag, we have the second minhag, we have comma versions of the second minhag, and we have the Arizal Shita to keep all the days of Sfira, which the Hasidim do, except for the days that you don't say Tachnun. So we have all different approaches to how to observe Sfira. When exactly the Talmidim Rabbi Akiva died? Now, realizing that the Gemara doesn't tell us, other than in general terms, that it happened between Pesach and Shavuos. And we first started our mourning practices close to 1,900 to 1,000 years afterwards. So we well understand that we don't have a precise Messiah exactly. Well, when did Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim die? You know, we don't have access to be able to look up the Hamodiah, you know, from those days, you know, to read about the tragedy, to know exactly, you know, its parameters. So, and then we're dealing with, then we have an adjustment within that minhag, Lag BaOmer. So that's even more obscure than the minhag. The minhag itself is, as I said, not so clear in its various parameters. And that's why we have so many approaches to it.
Is that why one can be makel easiest than during Sfira? Because it's
that's the reason for the fact that in Sfira Sa'ima we are relatively lenient. Is because the whole thing is a minhag. 3 weeks is also a minhag. 3 weeks has a graver tone to it than the time of the Sfira Sa'ima. So
this is an older minhag. It's an older minhag. That comes from the time of the Gemara?
No, it's a minhag. No, from the time of the Gemara, it's only Shavuos, Shechal, Tisha B'Av. Everything else is added afterwards. That's why the Sfarim don't have 3 weeks. They only have Shavuos, Shechal, Tisha B'Av, basically.
But they pay for that when they do slichas.
Yeah.
So one Sfari said, told me, he said, there's no amount of rice that makes it worth it on Pesach to wake up 30 days.
Called upon him. So we want to examine a little bit what happened to Lag B'Omer as best we can. Now, one of the things we know, it's apparently it's associated, that we know in Svarim Lag B'Omer, with Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Now, there are apparently from Svarim two major events in his life which took place on Lag B'Omer. One is, as we know, that he ran afoul of the Roman Empire, and his life was in danger. He went into hiding in a cave outside Tveria for 12 years with his son, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon. And there they survived miraculously. And 12 years later, they felt it was time to come out, and they were correct. The danger had passed. So there are those that write that the day that he emerged from the Ma'ara was Lag B'Omer. So that's one connection to Rosh Hashanah ben Yochai with Lag B'Omer.
That was the first time or the second?
First time. What do you mean, the first time that he...
They emerged twice.
Yeah. I'm not sure which of the two. But the day that he emerged was Lag B'Omer. I presume it means the second. That's my assumption. But it's merely an assumption.
Why is it so significant?
We'll soon see why it was significant. We'll get back to that. The question is a very good question of it. So why is why is it so significant? Yeah. Number two, that apparently the day of his death was also on Lag B'Omer. So these are the two major events which were associated with his life. Now, Rav Shimon ben Yochai is also the authorship of the Zohar is attributed to him. Now, this is a very important point. Apparently, the assumption being that the Sisrei Torah he learned while he was in the Ma'ar.
For whom?
Apparently, Eliyahu HaNavi, whatever he had, he lived B'derech Nes. He had tremendous scholars in Torah while he lived there. Apparently this was at least part of the work of those 12 years was the Sisrei Torah. Now we have a lot of different things. On Lag B'Omer, children play with bows and arrows. It's an ancient, a rather old minhag in Klal Yisrael. The reason for that seems to be because the Medrash tells us that when he emerged from the Ma'ara and he was sizing up the situation, so he saw a hunter hunting birds. And the hunter shot at the birds, and a heavenly voice proclaimed, one had to be Rav Shimon ben Yochai to hear that heavenly voice, but the heavenly voice proclaimed if the arrow would strike the bird or the arrow would miss the bird. So Rav Shimon ben Yochai said that if there's such ashgocha protis on the birds, then Allah has come overcome on the human beings. And it gave him the courage to proceed, not to stay in hiding. So we mark that in this manner. Now, we're told that on the day that Rav Shimon ben Yochai died, he told his Talmidim, and we'll come to that, let's go back a step, that he was engaged in teaching significant amounts of desire to his Talmidim. And Ad Kedei Kach, this was destined to be the last day of his life, and he didn't finish. So we're told that the Messiah is that the day was extended. The sun didn't set until Rav Shimon ben Yochai finished teaching the poor what he had to teach him desire, and the sun set. And this is the Inyan of the Maduras, of these bonfires, seems to be associated with two aspects of this day. Number one, it's a sign of the Eish of Torah. Mimino Eish Dos Lama was a day of tremendous scholars of revelation of Torah, Tirukshim Ben Yochai. And the fact that the day was extended to allow him to complete his teaching of the Zohar to his Talmidim is also marked by an abundance of light. Now, the Ma'ara of Shimon Ben Yochai, I will tell you from one thing that I know about it, is a spooky place. It's a spooky place. There was a Mekubal in Eretz Yisrael, if you are my age or up, you may remember, because if you're not, you're not going to remember this, but right after the Six-Day War, there emerged the fact that there was a Sephardi Mekubal. His name was Yaakov, I believe. I believe Yaakov was his name. And he had written a letter earlier that year. And here was Tovshin Chav Zayin, that there would be a war in Eretz Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael would have a phenomenal victory in this war.
Is this Moroccan person?
I don't know. I don't know his background, but I remember the story, and Chevra were talking about the story at the time, but I confirmed years later in Eretz Yisrael that it was true. How do I know that it was true? Because he was a relative of a man that I know, the Talmud and Chazon Ish. He's Baruch Hashem. He lives in Har Nof today, Chova Kablan, and he's a very hard-headed person. He's not, you know, a frivolous person with Maisaloch, and it's not his sphere. He's a real Talmud and a Chazon Ish. He's in his 80s, and he's shakua and learning. Learning is what his life is about. But it was a shiva part of his life, and then, for certain family reasons, he had to take over a family business. He was a very successful businessman, and then he retired, and now he spends a lot of his time learning. So he told me that this Sfardish Mekubal was a relative of his. Many, many years ago he told this to me. It's close to about 40 years ago. And he was a person that people recognized as being a Mekubal, and people came to him to be mispalo. The family knew his practices. He would never tell a person that he would have a Refuah Shleima if he wouldn't. He knew which person, when a person came to him, he knew who was going to live and who was going to die. So the person that I spoke to when his first child was born, his child was very ill. So they went to him and they said, they asked him that he should accept to be sandik by his child's bris, and he wouldn't. So they prevailed upon him. Finally he said, I'll be sandik by the bris of a son of yours. And Kahoya, the first child did not live. They had another son, and he was sandik by a subsequent son. He's the one, he told me, that wrote this letter. How did the letter come about? The letter came about at the end of Tovshin Chovov. He went on Rosh Chodesh Elul to be mispalo at the kever, at the tzion of Rav Shimon ben Yochai in Meron. When he came back from the tzion, from being mispalo there, he told his family that this coming year he's leaving the world. He saw a sign, there was a sign that he felt, saw, whatever, understood, that the Ma'or of Rav Shimon, that's it, his time has come. And, you know, this coming year, he's leaving the world. And he wrote this letter. And Kachoya, and Chodesh Cheshvan, he died. So I say the place is a very spooky place. You know, from a Kobol of this stature, went, and over there he had such a galus, apparently it's galus of his own fate, and his galus of what was going to happen in Eretz Yisrael that year. It's a very profoundly holy place. I sometimes think that the Kedusha is so great there. It's one of the reasons. It's one of the strangest Mekumis Kedusha in Klal Yisrael. Until now, it has been the Barosha of a lot of strange characters. You know, your Kaisel, that's tons of normal people. There's some characters hanging out there. The Kevarochel is that way, Chevron is that way, but Meron is the Barosha of a lot of very strange people. Just, you know. So I told my brother-in-law once, I think the Rebbeinu Shlomo wants to conceal the Kedusha, that we should be so distracted by all the odd people hanging out there and all the odd things that go on there, that we shouldn't be able to tune into the Kedusha. And it's a very holy place.
Is his Kever Meron in the same place as the cave that he spent the 12 years in?
No, no. Not that I knew. I don't think anyone, I have not heard that anyone claimed that to be the case. So I think that with Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that we're marking two things about him. And maybe there's something else, there's another dimension too, which dovetails with this. And that is, the day that Rav Shimon ben Yochai came out of the kever is really the day that the Zohar is starting to be delivered to the world. That's the Haschalah. The end of that process was also on Lag BaOmer, on the last day of his life. So, the Inyan, the Maseres HaTorah of Sisrei Torah, is particularly tied to Lag BaOmer, which could be the reason that the Arizal himself used to go to the Tzion, to the Ma'ara of Rav Shimon ben Yochai and Lag BaOmer. He was one of those that went to the Tzion Dafka on Lag BaOmer. So that could be because of its association with the Sisrei Torah, which the Arizal was one of the foremost Gedolim in Sisrei Torah. So Lag BaOmer was associated with Sisrei Torah. The Maduras represent the Eish of that Torah, the fire of that Torah. That's what the Maduras represent. I mentioned before, and unfortunately I'm going to have to look back, maybe we can dig out the Shurim from 2-3 years ago on Lag BaOmer, because I'm missing a source. I saw myself quoted from the Chido, but the Chido was a very prolific author, has endless form. So the couple of form that I got my hands on and I looked and it wasn't in, but I do know that I had a source, and we discussed the source 2 or 3 years back, that the Chido writes that there's another event which took place on Lag BaOmer. And that event was the founding of Rabbi Akiva's second yeshiva. Also took place on Lag BaOmer. Now, that's a very, very significant aspect. We have to understand in historical terms the era of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva lived in one of the most tragic times in Jewish history. And just imagine a person that lived at the time of the Holocaust. And imagine that the war would end and everything is shattered and we start to build again. And no sooner do we start to see significant success. So there's a feeling that the Jewish people will get back on its feet. Rabbi Akiva taught for 40 years, so approximately from the year 100 to the year 140. He was martyred approximately the year 140. So his teaching of Torah started 30 years after the Churban. So all of a sudden there's a tremendous glimmer of hope. It looks like Klal Yisrael has an Osset. Rabbi Akiva's Torah illuminates Eretz Yisrael. And all of a sudden, in less than 5 weeks, it's gone. It's as if the Rabbeinu Shalom says to us, he doesn't want us. I'm not interested in you. The despondency, which took hold, obviously, after such a catastrophe, we can't begin to imagine. And the Gemara says in Yevamos, V'ya'olam shomeim. The Torah, younger Talmidei Chacham, didn't exist, basically. There were some altichkas like Rabbi Akiva, but a young Dor of Talmidei Chacham didn't exist. There was nobody to carry the banner of Torah. Ad shebo Rabbi Akiva etzor Rabbeinu shebedorim. Until Rabbi Akiva hooks up with his 5 Talmidim. The ones that we know on every page in Shas, Rameya, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elozer, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yasi. Behem shall be the Torah by Yisrael. They became the Maseres HaTorah, the ones that convey Torah to the Dor. So Lag BaOmer then served another function of Torah. Another function of Torah. The death of Rabbi Akiva's Talmida was not only, it was a tragedy, not only of the loss of such Talmida Chachamim, but a national catastrophe. That a whole door of Tanoim, of Talmida Chachamim, was wiped off the map in 5 weeks. And where would we have the strength and the ability to preserve Torah in a meaningful fashion after this? Nobody left. He was an old man already.
And nothing was written down.
Yeah. There was no, it's before the writing of the Mishnah even. What's going to be with us? Aaron Kotler, Zecher Tzadik L'Vrocha, writes circa 1948, 47, 48, when the Arabs were beginning to wage war against Eretz Yisrael. He says, I fear for the Osset of Klal Yisrael, he writes. He was a tremendous mindman, but he was a practical person. He says, I fear for the Osset, for the future of the Jewish people. He says, Lo Aleinu, if we, the community in Eretz Yisrael goes down, he says, he doesn't think that we have the ability to withstand another tragedy after the losses of the Holocaust. That's what he writes. Aaron Kotler. What did the people in the era after the Churban think? Everything was shattered. Millions of people died. Torah was, the existence of the Jewish people was greatly challenged. It's a little bit of Torah that also went down the tubes. This old rabbi, Rabbi Akiva, left, but there's nobody in Mengidi and Mentioshim. Who is it going? Then the Rabbeinu Shalom B'chastoi on Lag BaOmer, and I don't think the first Lag BaOmer, but sometime subsequent to that on Lag BaOmer, he opened the yeshiva. And that yeshiva preserved the Torah. Rabbeinu HaKadosh would be another 100 and something years later till he would write the Mishnah. But what took place then preserved the Torah until the time of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And then Rabbeinu HaKadosh used the tranquility that he had to record the Mishnah to preserve the Torah. So Lag BaOmer, it's another aspect of Lag BaOmer. The Torah of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Torah HaNista, but Torah HaNiglo. The Gemara says, Kula Stimta, the Gemara in Daf Beis Amud Aleph, in Megillah, Kulos Timto, Liba de Rabbi Akiva. All the Stam Taras Kayanim, Stam Mishnah, they all follow Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because he was the Messiah and his Talmidim. We say Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So it follows Shitas Rabbi Akiva. Kulos Timto, Liba de Rabbi Akiva.
Is that why he's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu? As far as like, if Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't get his Torah.
Well, there was another, no, there's his greatness. I don't know. It's true. And Maaseh HaTorah also had a phenomenal role. A phenomenal role. But his Koyach and Pilpul HaTorah was, in terms of the human potential of it,
mastery,
was exceeded. Chazal say, I'm not saying something of my own, exceeded that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu learned the Messiah everything. But in the Koyach of Pilpul, of seeing it in the Torah Shebiksav, from the Torah Shebiksav, deriving those principles, Rabbi Akiva exceeded apparently Moshe Rabbeinu. Because Chazal tell us, the Rabbeinu Shalom showed Moshe Rabbeinu Rabbi Akiva as Chol Shadaite. He became despondent. The profundity of Rabbi Akiva's Torah, who stood in awe. So the Rabbeinu Shalom told them not to worry about it. Why? Because it all comes from Torah's Moshe, the Torah that you gave. So the survival of Torah is rooted in Lag B'Omer too. And that perhaps is the Yisoid. The fact that there's no Avelus on Lag B'Omer, that's understandable. Whether we assume that that was the Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim stopped dying on that, they will come back to that in a moment. And if you learn, like, presume like the second minute, that at least they didn't die on that particular day. Maybe they died before, they died after, but on that day, so that day was a day particular of Midas Arachamim. Okay, so it's not a day of Avelus. But what's the Simcha about? Now we can ask the question more profoundly concerning the death of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim. Let's assume the first minute. They stopped dying after 33 days. Why did they stop dying?
Because there weren't any left.
It says there were none left. Why? Basically, nobody was left. So was it a pshat? Unless the Gemara means that it's just Kula Mason. The Gemara doesn't say there were some survivors. There was nobody left. They had to get five new Talmidim. So, you know why they stopped dying? There was nobody left to die. So, it's our grace of Simcha. And secondly, something else. There's another aspect to this, which is that suppose that they stop dying. And suppose the Avelus ends. So that day that the Avelus ends, you get up and you start dancing. Do we have to tell a person that Lo Aleinu, the day that he gets up from Shiva, don't bring a band and start to dance? What normal person is in the mood to do such a thing? He doesn't need a halacha to tell it to him. His own seichel tells him. It just, there's no desire. Who has the heart and the desire to do such a thing? It's reflected in the halacha that, as I've mentioned other times, in Siman Tavkuf Nun Tes, in the halacha of Motzei Tisha B'Av, so there's a minig not to eat meat and drink wine. It says, Mipnei Evloi Sholyon. What's Pshat Evloi Sholyon? This one. That if you were really in mourning in the daytime, what, you're going to get up and party in Motzei Tisha B'Av and start drinking Bosar V'Yayin? So there's a minig not to have Bosar V'Yayin, even though it's not halacha. So all of a sudden they started dying, and we're getting up, the music's on, everybody takes a haircut, we're jumping for joy. Peculiar. But I think the pshat is that it's a celebration of Torah. It's the Torah of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, that it was Moses' Sisrei Torah then, but a celebration also of Torah Sanigla. That in the depths of the Golos, Rabbi Akiva founded a yeshiva. A yeshiva that was very difficult to found. The personal strength that it took to do that, I can't begin to fathom. After the Rabbeinu Shalom took 24,000 Talmidim from him, what should be the normal person's reaction? Listen, I'm in the wrong business. In heaven, they're not interested in my product. You know, I put together a booming business, and from heaven there came Kalah Hayad with the back of the hands. They wiped it off. The normal reaction is, listen, Adkan, I did my thing, I'm going home, and let somebody else worry about it. But in heaven, they sent me the message, you're not the one. But Rabbi Akiva didn't take that message. Rabbi Akiva took the message, Baboka Tizra Zarecho L'Erev Al Tanach Yilecho. If I was zoichet to have Talmidim in my youth, I'll be able to have Talmidim in my older years too. What will come, what the Rabbeinu Shalom wants, will come from it. That strength of Emunah to go forward, to wake up tomorrow and to look to start the new yeshiva. And that yeshiva was preserved the Torah. He was right. So it's a celebration of that koyach, of the survival of Torah.
How could the Rabbeinu Shalom expect them to pass a test like that?
Listen, I don't understand. But I don't understand the Gedolim who survived the Second World War either. How they were able to just keep.
And if you put your kochas into yeshiva, you build a huge.
Listen, look at
and
it.
It's gone.
Look at it. That's what happened. What happened with Aaron Cutler? Right, he put his tremendous of his kochas from 20 to 50, basically, and then did he whatever in the yeshiva in Kletsk. And overnight, it was wiped off the map, and he barely escaped with his own life. And he came to the United States. And I spoke to one of his talmidim, who told me he heard this from Irving Buenum. Irving Buenum met him at Grand Central Station. He arrived from the West Coast, and he traveled by train across America to New York. Irving Buenum met him. So he gives him shalom. And what does Avaron ask him? He says, "How are we going to build the yeshiva?" He says, he was blown away. There's a man for a year and a half has been running for his life. His world went up in flames. He steps off the train in New York. It's no interest in resting. Put your feet down. Rest for a month or two. The day they got off the train, he was starting to build the yeshiva. A week later, he already had talmidim gathered, ready to start teaching them. And he started whatever, and he made a meeting already to start founding Lakewood. I don't know where a person has such a moon and such strength. I don't. Totally beyond me. The same thing. The world around him went up in flames. Everything. And he barely survived himself. And he writes in a letter in 1947. He says, why am I starting yeshiva? We're 61 years old. Why am I starting yeshiva now? Because Chazal said, Babuk et Yisra Zarech Ulera Vatanach Yodech. So we said, I had thousands of talmidim in my youth. Satmar Rebbe, yeah. He says, and money was no object. I had great frum industrialists at my side. Whatever I wanted, whatever I needed, they took care of. And to help run the yeshiva, the parents didn't have a lot, but some money they had, so they sent something to the yeshiva. So I had something from them too to help run the yeshiva. He says, now I have 300 orphans in my yeshiva without any parents to give me a penny. The industrialists that were off my side are gone. I have another 300 talmidim waiting to get into the yeshiva. I don't know where to put them. I have no room for them. But Chazal said, he's plaintive. He's apologizing almost why at the age of 61 he's beginning this. Look what he accomplished. In Hashemayim. That ability that we saw from Rabbi Akiva, that in the darkest hours, there's a hashgacha of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Yilaisi shochach mikvizaron, that's also part of Lag BaOmer. The new yeshiva was founded in Lag BaOmer. It took a long time until we realized what the payers of this yeshiva were going to be.
That year?
No, I don't presume it was that year. Some year subsequent, I don't know which year, first year too, I have no idea. So it is the Sisrei Torah. It frames the Sisrei Torah of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. That's when he began really to bring desire to the world on Lag BaOmer, when he emerged from the Maor. And that's when he completed teaching desire to the world. It was on Lag BaOmer, the day of his demise.
Is there any knowledge of the Zohar before?
There was undoubtedly. There was. It's part of Torah Shabbat Peh.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, it's a chiluk of Torah Shabbat Peh. I mean, there are those who showed him that had Messiah for it, and those who showed him that didn't have Messiah for it. And the Rambam's Messiah, the Rambam did not really have a Messiah of Kabbalah, basically, as far as we get it. The Rambam, good, there's a divide, whatever. There are Rabbeinu Shlomo's reasons. The Ramban was very steeped in Kabbalah. The different people have a different chelik in Torah. The Alshech lived in Tzfat together with the Arizal. So the Alshech always, you know, was thinking that he should learn Kabbalah. So once he came to the Arizal, and he said he wanted to come to the Arizal Shiur. So the Arizal said, okay, come, whatever, the Shiur is this and this time, come to the Shiur. So he came, and he fell asleep. And he slept through the whole Shiur. So the Arizal told him afterwards, it's poshut. He said, I always knew, and that's why I never asked you to come. He says, you're chaylik in Torah and Torah and Nigla, not in Torah and Nista. So you came to the Shia, no Shaykh, said, you're not Shaman. I said, that's it, they wish to put you out. You know, slipped through the Shia. nothing to do with you. So that perhaps is why that's the celebration of Lag BaOmer tonight. The celebration of Lag BaOmer is the survival of the Jewish people, but not merely the physical survival, but the spiritual survival of the Jewish people. The Holy Nesivos tells us that, come back to this always because it's stunning, that we make a brocha on the Chagim, Shechiyonu v'kiyimonu v'giyonu lazman hazeh. The only thing wrong with this brocha, it's not a repeat, it's a three-peat. But you can take, listen, Shechiyonu v'kiyimonu v'giyonu. Choose one of the three. If I made the brocha, then I wanted, okay, choose one of the three, whichever one you want. But what do you need all three for? Shechiyonu v'kiyimonu, you seem to say the same thing three times over. So the Nesivos in his Agoda tells us that there's a very profound meaning to this bracha. Chai is the notion Am Yisrael Chai. That we survived. We're here. It's not such an easy task in this world to survive. And especially not if you're the Jewish people. I mentioned it other times. My Talmidim started global history, what we used to call world history when we went to school. So at the beginning of the book, there's a little box on the bottom of the page which lists a few of the ancient peoples of the world. So I tell them, listen, read over this list and tell me which is the only one that's still around today that you don't have to go and do an archaeological dig to find. It's the Hebrews, the descendants of Abraham Avinu. We're here. All the rest of them that they list there, without an archaeological dig, you're not finding anything out. You're not meeting up with them. They're gone. So Klal Yisrael, Am Yisrael Chai. Chai lo'ad, we say in the morning in Baruch Shalma. Chai lo'ad. But that's still not enough to make a bracha. That's still not enough. Boy, if we live, but we have no fidelity to the Rabbeinu Shalom's principles, then what's the use? We're not going to come to do a mitzvah. Kayam, he said, is the midah that we find the Rabbeinu Shalom. The Rabbeinu Shalom is Kayam lo'netzach. Is that which the Novi and Malachi says, Ani Hashem lo ishanisi, the Rabbeinu Shem is unchanging. Kimono means we're unchanging. We have the same Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, the same Torah that Rabbi Akiva had, that the Rambam had, that's all Torah, same mitzvahs. But Jewish history has taught us a very difficult lesson, that even though we are chai, we're living, and kayam, we're committed to doing the mitzvah, there's no assurance that we're going to wind up doing the mitzvah. Why? Because we need the practical circumstances around us to allow us to do the mitzvah. I have to live with the political tranquility to be able to do a mitzvah. I have to have the object. I'm committed to Lulav and Esrog, but I can't get an Esrog. So what does help this man? What does it help me? Can I do the mitzvah? No. It's Higiyonu, the practical circumstances which allow us to do the mitzvah. I have the object of the mitzvah. I have the political tranquility to be able to do the mitzvah. And that's Higiyonu. So we thank the Rabbeinu Shalom when we come to do a mitzvah that we have all three of these factors have joined together, have coalesced. Shechiyonu, we're here. Higiyonu, we're committed to the Torah of Higiyonu. When you've given us the opportunity, the practical opportunity to act upon the mitzvah. So, this recognition that survival is no easy task, and to have the recognition of the Rabbeinu Shalom Torah, and then the opportunity to observe the Rabbeinu Shalom Torah, that's something that Jewish history has taught us not to take for granted. So that's the simcha of Lag BaOmer. That it's a symbol that in one of the darkest hours of Jewish history that the Torah can thrive. It will be reborn. And I believe that history will take that lesson from the first two generations after the Holocaust. That after such horrific and overwhelming tragedy, that the Jewish people rebounded. We rebuilt, and we went on. The symbol of that is Lag BaOmer. Now, it's interesting, in practical terms, we have varied practices. We Ashkenazim celebrate Lag BaOmer. The Sfardim celebrate, they may celebrate Lag BaOmer too as a yontif in its own right, but they don't end the Sfiras HaOmer until Lama Dalet BaOmer. Now even there I'm getting mixed reviews, because the Syrians tell me that they end on Lama Dalet BaOmer. I hear from the Persian Talmud that they end on Lag BaOmer. But on the other hand, my son heard from a Persian Rav that he said that the fact that it in Persian it ended in Lag BaOmer, he held was a mistake. Maybe they adopted something of the Ashkenazi customs, but really the real Messiah was standing on Lama Dalet like the Beis Yosef. So then, even within ending, but we conduct weddings on Lag BaOmer. When do we conduct the weddings? So the Chofetz Chaim is partial to the view only to make weddings Lamed Gimel during the daytime, not to make on the evening preceding Lag BaOmer. In other words, on Wednesday night, according to the Chofetz Chaim's view, he was not in favor of making weddings on that night. But the minhag in Europe was not in accordance with the Chofetz Chaim. Rav Moshe wrote, and I heard Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Kibalti from someone that spoke to him, that said the minhag in the shtetlach in Europe was they made chasanas on Leil Lag BaOmer. Presumably the cheshbon is that because of the mitzvah Shabbat, they were mekel. Because of the mitzvah, they were mekel. Oh. Now,
how are we knowing in America?
In America, I think the common practice is to make on the night preceding Lag BaOmer.
But we don't get haircuts or things like that.
No, haircuts is not a dvar mitzvah. That's what we're more machmer.
So how do we understand that people have bonfires with the music and things?
Oh, so lidaiti, if you ask, I'm not in favor of them. But not, don't get me wrong, I need to be very, very careful. I'm not against what the Chassidim do. I don't think that we should be involved in them. That's something else. Why? The Chassidim follow the Shita of the Arizal. So they keep the entire sphere. So Lag BaOmer is a day that they don't recite Tachlit. So from their standpoint, it's not a day of sphere. So Mamela from the Chassidish Aminig, it makes sense to be Mekel on the night of Lag BaOmer.
And what's the significance of Lag BaOmer if you're holding, if they didn't necessarily stop dying?
Well, because of the associated with Rosh Hashanah and Yochai. That's the significance. And the problem is for the non-Chassidish people. So we keep 33 days, not in the fashion. Lag BaOmer is one of the 33 days. Whether in the first minhag or the second minhag, but Lag BaOmer is one of the 33 days. So in that day, we need Miktsas HaYom Kekula. For it to be a day, we need the night and part of the day. So I'm not happy that people are going to be a Mekel on the night preceding Lag BaOmer. I think for the non-Chassidish people, it's inconsistent with the halacha. That's what I believe.
In terms of what?
To have music.
Music.
Yeah. They make these bonfires, they make music, they dance.
But a wedding, you can have music.
A wedding is a dvar mitzvah. It's a different story. A dvar mitzvah, we have a whole different stance.
So if you're never making something, you happen to be in Williamsburg that night, you shouldn't go to one of these.
Whatever. You want to pass by to look for a minute, and you know, fine. But you have to be a participant.
2 hours.
You can go around the corner from my house and you'll find one too.
I think the one shouldn't go to one of the
I wouldn't be a participant.
We have a chasna though, that's since there's darkness for the cave.
Yes.
So if I went, the Rav wouldn't see me.
What?
If I went, the Rav wouldn't see me.
That's okay. Well, hold it at this point. You know, there's an old joke. There's an old joke about that. The joke goes that a guy goes to Rabbi Yosef. I told this to Rabbi Yosef Halberstam. He hadn't heard the joke. He was rolling. The joke is a Rishalmi goes to Rabbi Yosef, and he says he's marrying someone, and his father-in-law is a satmar. He let her go to the Kaisel or not, because his father-in-law is Kepedis. So they say Rabbi Yosef told him, you're allowed to go to the Kaisel, but don't go at night, because you'll meet your shver there. That's what you're saying, you're not going to meet me, you know. We did speak yesterday. We have to speak more.
Did speak yesterday?
Yeah, you had quite a while yesterday.
I'm not filled in, so I don't.
We spoke a long time yesterday, maybe 20, 25 minutes.
I did not know that. And she bought into it.